We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
You have to let it all go, Neo. Fear, doubt, and disbelief. Free your mind.
I just want to make an impact, a positive impact, on as many people as possible.
You gotta want to succeed as bad as you want to breathe.
When you're down, you might feel like you want to give up. Don't stop. Keep moving. Keep breathing.
There's a war on consciousness in our society.
There is an awakeness, an awareness that sees it all. And it's in you too. It's in all of us.
We have to stop consuming our culture. We have to create culture.
This is the G and Coletti Show.
Let's begin.
On this episode of the G and Coletti Show, we sit down with Les Stroud, otherwise known as Survivor Man. I'm sure everyone is familiar with the Survivor Man show, where Les Stroud travels to remote areas in the world and has to survive by himself with very little water, food, and equipment. The premise of the show is simple. Just a man and his camera stranded in the forest, jungle, desert, or Arctic, and he must do what he can to survive.
Les has been in a lot of unique situations that has tested his body, mind, and spirit. We wanted him to share what he has learned through his unique experiences, the best form of learning in my opinion. He has had contact with indigenous tribes so remote they have never been in contact with people like us before. We wondered what effect being out in the wild, so connected with the natural world, would have on a spiritual level and on one's consciousness. Or the opposite, what effect might our current lack of connection to the natural world have on us?
Let me set the scene of what transpired that day. I'm driving downtown to interview the Survivor Man, and I'm excited to meet him, and I'm thinking about what he's going to be like and what he has survived versus what I've survived. I'm kind of thinking that I'm also kind of a Survivor Man myself. Now, I had to survive in the underworld, and he had to survive in the wilderness, and I'm not quite sure which one is more dangerous. But in some odd twist of fate, or perhaps a subconscious manifestation, as I'm driving in this daydream state, and I hear a weird noise coming from the back of my car. It's getting louder and louder. I'm on the highway and I realize that I have a flat tire. I pull over while cursing out a few saints and I get out and attempt to fix this flat tire. I was cold and I was lying on the ground trying to properly position the jack. I'm getting dirty, my nose is running because of the cold, and my hands are absolutely freezing from touching the cold steel of the frame of my car. I eventually change the tire, I get back into the car. And as I drive away, I think to myself, I'm kind of the urban Survivor Man. What I learned here is that this little mishap caused me so much discomfort and aggravation, and it pales in comparison to what Les has gone through. I now have a deeper admiration for Les and his ability to endure so much pain and suffering. A perfect prelude to the interview, but I'm not quite feeling a sense of gratitude just yet. I'm still furious. But life goes on, and I get to the theater and meet Les, and get to sit down with a real Survivor Man, and the interview does not go as expected.
I was really curious to hear how this one went. I'll admit I missed the interview and only briefly met Les for a quick picture before Anthony got his hands on him. I had to help my wife set up for our son's second birthday, and if I missed that, I would probably know firsthand what a Survivor Man would feel like spending the next few nights outside in the wild.
Yeah, that would definitely be something to survive. Well, I don't think you're going to survive that one.
Yeah, well, that's why I went and didn't stick around.
We're done abusing the Survivor reference. Let's get into the interview.
Biophilia is a real thing. You know, our inborn need to connect with the natural world, I think, is a real thing. But that said, I mean, let's face it. I mean, it's one thing to be in amongst people where you're preaching to the converted. It's another thing. You know, I can bring along and talk to lots of people that go, I could give a crap about nature. You know, I've bugs, no, cold, yuck, you know, trees, water, that's too intimidating. It's messy, you know. I mean, even up where I live, I mean, I've got neighbors who've moved up, and the first thing I remember the wife saying was, I can't wait to clean up the forest here. You know, it's like, excuse me? And I remember I played a joke on her. She said, are there a lot of bears here? My first answer was, yeah, there's lots of bears here. And there were. And then it was about cleaning up the forest. I said, you know, you clean up the forest. I said, bears like it when the place is cleaned up a bit. They really don't come around when it's too scraggly. My point being that, you know, here she is spending their ton of money on a big place up in central Ontario in the forest to have the place in the forest to go to, the weekend cottage or whatever. And their first thoughts were, how do we bring the city up here? In fact, they planted a lawn, which broke my heart.
I had the chance to research what biophilia means. The definition is that it suggests that there's an instinctive bond between human beings and other living systems. You know, having a mortgage is unnatural. Absorbing massive amounts of bad information, especially coming from the media, is unnatural. And perhaps we're not built to take in that level of negativity.
I absolutely agree. And when you're always distracted, of course, that instinctive bond is going to disappear. It's going to diminish because you're always distracted. So other examples of distractions like TV, cell phone, sports, you know, your work, people exercise as a distraction. Then there's, you know, the hard ones like the alcohol, the booze, the drugs, the gambling. You know, why people need distraction, I think, is a topic for another podcast. But one thing is certain, we've definitely lost our connection to nature, and you can actually feel the difference when you're in and out of nature.
You know, it's interesting that you compare booze and drugs to your cell phone. So there's a phobia. I researched this. It's called nomophobia, and it stands for no mobile phobia. And it's actually a phobia of not having your cell phone on you. So the issue with the cell phone is that you're constantly looking at it, and it gives you that these squirts of dopamine, which are the feel-good receptors in your brain, the feel-good chemical. So it's for reward seeking and to motivate you. And every time it squirts, it gives you that little bit of drugs.
That little beep that you got to like. Someone liked something of yours.
Exactly. So really, you've been hacked by cyber drug dealers that are manipulating the drugs inside your brain.
And that's what I worry about with children. You know, like, you want to give them the technology sort of to distract them from distracting you. Or you want to be distracted, so you give them the iPod to leave you alone so you can further distract yourself. And my only worry is that, you know, to what extent are we addicting these kids to technology, and are we, you know, cutting this bond, this instinctive bond to nature? I think about that a lot, and the only downside is you want the kids to know technology, because the learning curve at a young age, they learn so fast. You know, what age do we start seeing computers?
Yeah, that would be almost early teens.
Early teens. And now you see teenagers these days, they can already program, they can make their own games, they can do all kinds of stuff. So the early age exposure to technology, I think, is important, but we need to find the right balance so it's not overly addictive and distracting.
I think they can still learn how to use laptops perhaps in school rather than, you know, an iPad playing Bejeweled or whatever these games are. I'm not really interested in those kind of games, but I see my little cousins playing on them. You know, we just learn to move in a natural way. Like, how many people, it sounds funny to say, but everybody knows that, you know, most people can't go to the bathroom without their cell phone. I think I saw a funny meme where, you know, someone's basically on the toilet and they're like, oh shit, like, I forgot my cell phone. The thought of just sitting there by yourself in that little room doing your business for however long it is unbearable. And it's funny, but it's actually really sad.
So now I know when I hear the phone ringing in the company bathroom, it must be Anthony Coletti.
Absolutely, that's me. So I guess that's a challenge for everybody. Try to not bring your cell phones to the bathroom, or maybe don't take them out.
Well, out of curiosity, when was the last time you had a no tech day at all? Anyone listening, when was the last day you shut off your computer, your phone, your cell phone, and just had a no technology day? I can't remember the last time I've done it, unless I've accidentally lost my phone. So, you know, maybe one of the challenges you're going to have this week is take a day off technology and see how you feel. See if there's any difference. You think you can do it?
I think just like fasting, you got to take it easy. Just, you know, a couple hours at a time.
The fear.
Yeah.
Nomophobia.
Definitely diagnosed. But, you know, like intermittent fasting, maybe we can do intermittent phoning. So that's when we don't, we might not use our cell phones for, say, a certain, you know, window period. I know Brendan Bouchard talks about not using in the morning alone. You can increase your productivity by almost 30% by just not touching your cell phone.
You just made up that number, but somewhere around those lines.
Yeah, it's absolutely, it's factual. It's factual. Check it out. So we speak a lot about being distracted and being disconnected in our way of life. And I thought the next logical question would be to ask less, what exactly are we disconnected from, and what is this connection that we're all yearning for?
It's almost like you have to start speaking on an energetic level. For me, there's never been a surprise to the fact that if I want to deal with jet lag, I need to go walk barefoot in the grass on the ground where I landed, and it seems to fix the jet lag really quickly. So why is that? Is that some sort of airy fairy kind of weird thing? It's like it's an energetic thing. And when we connect to nature, when I do all by myself, or even, you know, with people or what have you, to me, you're reconnecting to the energy that sustains us all. There can be lots of things we think sustain us, but in the end, it's this planet, this earth, and the energy of this earth, water that we drink, and the ground that we pull our food from and walk upon, that ultimate connectivity, that reciprocal energetic connectivity. It sounds so cliche to say that it grounds us, but that's the best line. It grounds us.
Jet lag happens when we travel to a different time zone. It has to be east to west, and it throws off our body's circadian rhythm, and hormonal functions get thrown off. And, you know, he's claiming that connecting to the earth and grounding or earthing, it's actually very well known. He didn't come up with this practice, helps him get rid of jet lag, and I actually suffer. Giovanni seems to be the only one. He seems to be the anomaly that doesn't affect him. But for me, a couple of days, I'm absolutely out of it.
I'm saying I don't get knocked out. You know, you might feel a bit tired, but I don't get knocked out that badly. But yeah, it's about releasing the negative ions back into the earth. That's why they say when you go on vacation, you're on the beach, your feet are always in the sand. You have this constant connection. That's why you feel so good. In addition to the time off from whatever you do, and they even have technology now. You can plug it in to an outlet that's grounded to the earth, and it'll actually ground you from inside your condo in the 21st floor. So they're coming up with ways that you can still reconnect in a more future forward type of way.
Yeah, I've personally been experimenting with this, walking barefoot as much as possible. The effects are profound. You can feel the difference, absolutely. Good to do stuff like that without drugs like caffeine or alcohol or...
You wouldn't know about that then.
Yeah, caffeine.
When was the last time you were off caffeine?
Well, you know, well, listen, if it can minimize the amount of caffeine that I have to consume in one day and, you know, give my adrenals a break, all the power to
do it.
With all this talk about connecting to the earth and ourselves, I can't help but think that we just crossed over into what spirituality is. So I asked Les his definition of spirituality.
When you say the word spirituality, I get caught on two pathways right away. The one pathway is the one that I stay away from, and that's when you start to create dogma. An orthodox sort of dogma perspective where it's like a childlike way of learning. I mean, spirituality to me, on the right side of it, is connectedness to nature. That to me is, dare I say it, my spirituality, because again, now I've labeled it, right? And I don't like to label anything.
So to me, spirituality is the act of strengthening your connection to everything. So I agree with Les, you know, especially the natural world and all living things, you know, through your mind, body, and soul. Realizing that we are part of a greater whole is what spirituality is. You can definitely feel it more than you can even understand it.
I absolutely agree with your definition, but I had the chance to Wikipedia what the precise definition of spirituality is, and it said that there is no definition. Leading back to what you said, it's something that you can internalize and learn yourself and feel rather than someone else telling you. And, you know, a guy like Les spending so much time in nature, he got to learn from, I guess, the best teacher, which was nature itself.
You know, if you want to get a direct message from God, you're probably not going to get it on the internet or in a church. On an inward journey, and you can reconnect. Like all the great sages did, they isolated themselves in nature. Moses went to Mount Sinai. Jesus went into the desert for 40 days and 40 nights. Buddha sat under a tree for a long time. And even Muhammad was praying alone in a cave on Mount Jabal al-Nur. I probably said that wrong. But they all gained some spiritual insight and brought it back and shared it with humanity.
I guess Lestrade went into the forest, and that's why I really wanted to ask him about spirituality, because who else other than him can spend days or weeks on end in complete solidarity by himself, just him and connecting with the earth? I believe there are certain things that can happen to you in your life, whether it be cancer or a random car accident or maybe even getting shot by hitmen, that can change everything and change your perspective for the better. I believe having a near-death experience would really bring out the spirituality in a person. I know this from firsthand account. And I got the chance to ask Les if he ever had one of these death-defying experiences, you know, being how he's out in the forest and jungle all the time. There must have been something really crazy that happened to him. And he told me he did have an insane story, and he gets into it.
In the car crash in Mongolia that I was in, we were talking about this last night, so I'm bringing it up. I distinctly remember being in between the rolls. The car rolled twice at 50 miles an hour. And after the first roll, it was like somebody sitting beside me saying, "You know how you just hit your head? If you don't move now, you're going to break your neck on the next hit." And I didn't even know there was going to be a next hit. I mean, I thought maybe we're going to stop. But it was as clear as it was like somebody just saying, "You need to move right now." And I moved. And I know that it's very true. I'd be dead if I hadn't moved. You know, and I snapped my lungs and my ribs and collapsed the lung and all that sort of stuff. But held a lot better than snapping my neck.
You know, I've heard it time and time again and read it here and there in books that the more connected you become, the more your intuitive powers increase, the more you be able to tap into this sort of sense of intuition. So basically, the more connection, the more intuition. I know you have an interesting story of where intuition saved your life, but more than that, how it was at a time where you weren't even really that connected. So I'm curious, you know, Coletti, how did that change after when you started getting more connected?
Well, I noticed once I started eating properly and meditating and hang around, you know, different people like yourself and other people around CE that were having these enlightened conversations. So I felt like I was discovering that part of myself. It definitely upped my intuitive abilities. And, you know, I'm not psychic or anything. I'm not saying anything like that. But I get that
Maybe
feeling.
You are.
it's possible. It's possible. But I get that feeling in my stomach, and the lights just flashed in our office. I don't know why.
So what's going to happen? Let's see what kind of intuition you have now. Give me something quick.
What that could have been?
Is power going off in here? Are we going to lose it?
I don't know. You know what? I think it would be an error just to assume something, just to make something up. Right now, my intuition's saying nothing. It's flatlining.
Okay, tell us about when intuition saved your life. How about that?
Okay, so now, you know, to segue into a serious moment. Yeah, I was obviously, you know, when I was in my accident, I was staring at a van. I'm just kind of starting from the middle of the story. I was staring at a van that someone was coming, obviously, to hurt me. And I just felt this feeling, and people, you know, asked me, is it something in your stomach? Was it hairs on the back of your neck? Did you hear something? And the answer is none of the above. I really don't know. I really can't explain to you. I guess, you know, human language and speech is not capable of encapsulating and describing that experience. I just had a feeling, and it was, as much as I can't describe it, it was very, very strong. Kind of like Les said, he mentions almost hearing the voice, but he definitely felt it. It wasn't something he imagined or he may have possibly felt. It was a definite quantifiable feeling, but I can't tell you how or what it felt like.
So it seems like we're not getting into details of the story too much today, but when the intuition went to autopilot, did it save your life?
Absolutely. Well, I guess there's two parts of the intuition. There was the part of actually noticing the van and knowing I'm in danger. And then once the danger actually presented itself, everything kind of kicked into autopilot. It was like I was just watching myself move, and I made the right moves at the right time, and I was able to get out.
Thank God, or else this would only be the G show, and we know how boring that would be.
Absolutely. It's kind of crazy to make a joke at this time. It's a pretty serious situation. You know, geez, what are these morbid motherfuckers?
All right, let's get back into the interview. I was really curious about Les's interactions with these indigenous people and to get his interpretation of how they view us.
I had an elder in the middle of the Amazon jungle say to me, "Do you live like your grandfather?" I went, "No." "Do you want to live like your grandfather?" "No, I don't." He goes, "Yeah, well, neither do I." So we're quite happy to learn of all this other stuff. And, you know, first thing that they do is ask you for your watch or something. So every traditional... Now, all right, there's a few spiritual, more philosophical elders who say they lament the loss of their culture and they wish their young people would do the fishing like they did or sing the shamanistic songs. Sure, in the older generation. But anybody, let's say, under 50, they're ready to make the change.
So this is pretty crazy. I kind of took a step back when, you know, I asked him about the indigenous people and what they thought of our way of life. Obviously, it was a loaded question. I was expecting him to tell us that their way is so much more spiritual and they're so much connected to the earth and they think that we've evolved or over-evolved too much and we're lost. And he was like, absolutely not. They want to live exactly the way we live. And he's, you know, he looks me in the eye, leans over and he's like, "Do you live like your grandfather?" And I'm like, you know, obviously not. And he's like, "Yeah, neither do they." So.
Yeah, I get it, but I think it's a little bit misleading. You know, I think, you know, you said anyone under 50 would be ready to make the transition, but I'd want to see them make the transition and then decide whether they want to stay there or not. Like, they don't know what it's like to have pollution, working 40-hour weeks. You know, right now they're stress-free. You know, they have a natural life. Like, they're relaxed with their family a lot of the time. I'd like to see if they actually transitioned over, what that would be like.
So you think like having an outdated cell phone is just going to absolutely kill them. He's telling me that if the trout aren't swimming that year, they'll have like literally like a famine. People actually like lose weight. They'll have trouble hunting and staying alive. He said it's a continuous grind. They're working every day.
Do you know the mental, mental diseases and mental health rates in the tribal communities that are almost doesn't exist compared to like Western? These are things that they don't have to deal with, but people are breaking down here. So I think it's a little misleading. Maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't, but...
Let's say maybe we can tell by looking back. Would you trade your life here to go live like them?
Maybe not exactly like them, but some sort of in between, absolutely. I think we're way polarized on this side, and I think some of the tribes are also polarized in antiquity as well. But I think somewhere in between, that's where the balance lies. Like he talks about them wanting a watch, but I'm sure if you went down to the Amazon, they'd have some cool things that you'd want to take as a souvenir as well. Saying, "Oh, I've never seen this." And it's going back, the grass is green on the other side. What you don't have or don't want, you think is always better. Then you get there and you're like, "Oh, wait a minute, it's not as good over here. Maybe I want to go back." That's all I'm saying.
Okay, I disagree. I think you know, you'd like to visit them for a few weeks or so, but you'll be coming home really, really soon. And you know, you mentioned them having a more tranquil existence than ours, but maybe it's possible to achieve that through meditation. And I got the chance to ask Les if he's good at meditation.
Not very good at it until I kind of realized that actually I can do it. I can do it best in nature by not doing it at all. One of the things that, and I'll probably mention it on stage tonight, is I ran a course down in New York, the Omega Institute, which was all about spirituality and connecting to nature. And one of the things I had people do was towards the end, I picked them a spot by themselves in the bush. And I said, now lie down flat on your back, at least for one complete hour, and just look up. And 100% of them had not ever done that before. They'd never lied on the wilderness ground before. We don't do that, do we? We have camp chairs. We have rocks to sit on, or we have our smoke or our coffee. I mean, lie down. Use a rock as your pillow and lie down. That, for me, is meditation.
So I actually had the opportunity to give this a try. It's on our Instagram account. It was a wet, cold day, but I decided, you know what? We're all about, you know, creating change in ourselves and the world. So, you know, you can't preach it if you're not willing to try it yourself. You know, the ground was wet. It felt odd to just walk out to the middle of the forest and you just lie down and, you know, use a rock as a pillow, as he said. It was relaxing, though. It felt a little weird. And I was a bit worried about animals running up on me. But after a few minutes, you just start to relax and just enjoy the process.
What type of animals were you worried about running up on you?
Well, to be honest, you know, you're not worried about squirrels when you're standing up, and I'm almost 6 feet tall. But when you're on the ground, and
those squirrels are going to come attack you,
and you're in high grass. I don't know.
Watch out for the killer squirrels.
Squirrels, raccoons, skunks. Come on.
I think they're more afraid of you than you are of them. Well, no, I think you're more afraid of them. But really,
yeah, I've heard that
they're running in all different directions. From
yeah,
you.
I've heard of that line before too. But if you're just there and you're relaxing, you're pretty quiet. You know, they might sneak up on you. Might have a situation, especially a skunk. But, you know, I kind of felt like a kid at summer camp. Like, whoever gets to just lie on the ground, even in a urban area, do you ever just lie in the grass?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Any opportunity I get, I try to get out. I try to get my feet on the ground. Well, in my backyard, I always go barefoot. Drives my wife nuts, but me and the kids were always frolicking around barefoot. But I do go in the forest a lot. I was out there this weekend, and some of the best meditations I've had have actually been right in the middle of winter because, A, there's no bugs. But two, I'll lie down in like the pine trees in between in the snow, so it's like nice and padded, and I'll just lay back. And it's like, for that half hour, you just like disappear. It's like an amazing, amazing, I'll have to take you out. And everyone out there, I would highly recommend doing that. Dress warm, lay back in the snow, in the forest, and just do a nice meditation.
I've spent a lot of time now analyzing Les and where he's been in the world. And I thought we could learn a lot by reliving his worldly experiences and becoming more in tune with ourselves. And I have to admit, I have a different opinion now. While Les has been in some incredible situations, the most valuable skill that he can share with us is his ability to look inward and listen. Our peace and happiness are up to us and are created internally. Doesn't it make sense for the answers to our questions to come from the same place? Now, some people may disagree with me, but I don't think you're going to find what you're looking for in another country or someplace across the world. While this may help you get into the right state of mind, your intuition already knows what you need, and you just need to quiet your mind and listen. Les taught himself how to meditate. He learned how to cure himself of jet lag. He even tapped into his creative abilities through periods of isolation. He didn't take a course. He just intuitively figured out what felt right. And it appears he really learned how to connect. And that's it. That's the takeaway from this episode. Learning how to connect to yourself is the most powerful step you can take to creating meaningful change in your life. Guys, that's the end of my rant. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram. And if you want to keep in touch and see what we're working on next, subscribe to our email list. If you have any questions, comments, or just want to reach out, you can contact us at gianecoletti@collective-evolution.com. We really appreciate all our listeners, and we respond to all the emails. Thanks again.